From KMXT and Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Matson, delivering the essentials for everyday life in the last frontier. Learn more at matson.com/Alaska.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
Mariculture experts and tribal members gathered in Juneau last week to talk about the pressing obstacles and opportunities shaping the mariculture industry in Southeast Alaska. As KTOO's Alex Solomon reports, oysters were a main focus.
At the end of a dock in Auk Bay, an unassuming floating platform holds thousands of young oysters, called spat, in bins that are revealed when a farmer lifts a creaky hatch door. This is called a floating upweller system, or FLUPSY, and it's one way oyster farmers can keep more stock.
This is just a cheaper way to buy spat in a smaller size, much bigger quantity.
That's Miranda Hom, owner of Shinnecu Shellfish Company, a small, family-run Pacific oyster farm in Klawak. Hom is in Juneau for the day-long mariculture workshop organized by Alaska Sea Grant and Tlingit Haida. She says nutrient-rich water flushes through the FLUPSY, so the tiny oysters can grow quickly, big enough to fit into mesh bags out on a farm. This FLUPSY belongs to Salty Lady Seafood Company, the only oyster farm in Juneau. But Hom says she's planning to stock her own FLUPSY in Klawak. It's one way oyster farmers can scale up, even when there are bottlenecks in the supply chain.
Currently, there's only so many FLUPSYs in the state. And as a farmer, we've already not had seed needs met.
Most oyster farmers in Alaska, including Hom, have to ship in spat from out-of-state hatcheries, usually in Hawaii, Washington, Oregon, or California. Sometimes there are shortages at those hatcheries. And there's another way to address the supply chain problem, starting in-state hatcheries. As part of the workshop, participants are touring the University of Alaska Fairbanks Mariculture Research Hatchery at Lena Point, managed by Spencer Lunda. The facility pumps in seawater that gets heated and flows into troughs filled with oysters, where Lunda and his team are studying ways to produce spat locally for farms across Alaska.
It would be nice to have spat production in the state, and as well as to have just maybe be able to produce oysters that perform better in the conditions of Alaska because the water is very cold here compared to where oysters are typically grown.
He says the ultimate goal is to breed oysters that grow relatively quickly in cold water and form a deep cup with a lot of meat, traits desirable for farmers trying to turn a profit and consumers slurping them from the half shell. Back on the dock, Hom says the lease process to enter the industry is another issue that could be improved.
I'm here sharing about being a farmer and the struggles and challenges that we face firsthand so other Indigenous farmers can get into the industry.
She says it took her 2 years to get an aquatic farm lease. And she says the state's process doesn't consult with tribes to see whether proposed farm sites would overlap with subsistence seafood harvest sites.
I think it's crucial that the state of Alaska incorporates tribal consultation rather than just city government, city municipal government consultation.
But developing mariculture operations could become a boon for Native communities, too. Frank Nix is the cultural foods manager for the Organized Village of Kasan. He says he's at the workshop to see how mariculture could bolster economic development and food security in his small village.
So most of us are already working 3 or 4 jobs, and all of our facilities are running 3 or 4 programs. So when it comes to looking at opportunities like, well, maybe we don't have the manpower to run a farm, but, you know, it seemed like 1 or 2 people could manage a space of the size that we were just in.
Like a small hatchery.
I think one of the most valuable things that I've seen so far is that this seems perfectly doable.
Nix says he's grateful to attend the workshop on a travel scholarship, and the recent availability of funding and training in Alaska mariculture makes the industry attractive. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
Wrangell officials invited local fishermen to a roundtable earlier this month to talk about how the city can better support the fleet. KSTK's Colette Zarnicki attended the meeting, where what began as an update on city projects turned into a broader conversation about costs, infrastructure, and the future of the working waterfront.
Fishermen filled a classroom at the Nolan Center. Some held complimentary beers from the city, part of what borough officials called a casual kickoff to more engagement with the fleet. Borough manager Mason Villarma acknowledged those conversations haven't happened often.
We haven't done a whole lot of engagement with you guys throughout the year, so kind of wanted to kick it off this year with some kind of discussion on things that we can do as a city to better support the industry.
Villarma started with an informal presentation on city projects, from harbor improvements to discussions about managing sea otter populations. But as the presentation wrapped up, fishermen had concerns of their own. Fisherman Antonio Silva raised concerns about the city's new 40-year lease agreement with American Cruise Lines. Silva says if the city is committing to work closely with the cruise company, local seafood should be part of that partnership. He pointed to a previous attempt by a local oyster business to work with the company.
I know that there was a negative interaction with American Cruise Line and Brian there at the oyster with his oyster business trying to do something exactly like this, and he felt he got burned, and it kind of soured his taste with American Cruise Line.
Silva says a clearer commitment to local sourcing could help rebuild trust. The conversation then shifted to infrastructure, specifically the city-owned cold storage facility. Villarma said the city is exploring the possibility of selling the facility to a commercial processor, noting that much of the space isn't being used by local fishermen. But several in the room pushed back, saying the freezer is critical, especially for those who directly market their catch.
It would be a huge hit to a lot of the townspeople in town that use it to store moose or other product, or I know that there's even small businesses that aren't affiliated with fishing that use it. I mean, you see all three processors use that space.
Fisherman Brenda Schwartz-Jaeger says access to the freezer allows smaller operators to stay competitive.
Some of the fishermen in this room, we are utilizing that facility and probably couldn't do a lot of what we do without that, and really appreciate having it.
She says if the city does move forward with a sale, fishermen hope future ownership would still prioritize local access. Beyond infrastructure, fishermen also raised concerns about rising operating costs, including shipping and fuel. Silva says direct market sellers often don't ship enough volume to qualify for lower freight rates. And fuel prices are another pressure point. Fisherman Winston Davies says commercial fishermen are paying more at the dock than drivers on the road, even without road taxes.
They're gouging our industry, our commercial fishermen.
City officials offered a few potential solutions. Economic Development Director Kate Thomas suggested adding local seafood suppliers to city tourism and harbor websites to boost visibility. Villarma also floated a possible pilot program during tourist season, allowing fishermen to sell directly at city events. As for the freezer, he says more discussion is needed before any decision is made. For many in the room, the discussion wasn't about opposing growth, but about making sure fishing remains part of it. As tourism expands and new partnerships take place, fishermen say they want the working waterfront to remain central to Wrangell's future. In Wrangell, I'm Colette Zarnicki.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is severely restricting and, in some cases, closing outright sport king salmon fishing on the central Kenai Peninsula this year again. The state's sport fishing division issued a flurry of emergency orders earlier this month that target the Kenai and Kasiloff rivers. As reported by KDLL's Ashlyn O'Hara, the department's Jay Bomber says the limits should not come as a surprise for people familiar with the fisheries.
I hope it's not the new normal, but we are in that period of low productivity, so we're going to have to take action to make sure to conserve kings.
On the Kenai River, the King Sport fishery is totally closed. The closure applies to the early run from May to mid-June and to the late run from mid-June to mid-August. During that time, anglers may not fish for king salmon of any size and must immediately release any caught without taking them out of the water. For both the early and late runs, the department is forecasting escapement of large fish to be less than the minimum required to open the fishery. The Kenai River's late-run king salmon fishery has a stricter escapement goal than the early run because the state has designated a stock of management concern due to poor returns. Bomber says the restrictions are strengthening king returns.
They are making a difference, and that's why we're encouraging anglers to read them, read over them, pay attention, follow them.
There's slightly more leniency on the Kasiloff River this summer, where king fishing is sharply restricted instead of fully closed. Between May and mid-August, anglers may only catch one hatchery king salmon per day. The bag and possession limit is one hatchery king 20 inches or longer. Anglers can tell whether a king salmon was hatchery produced because it will be missing an adipose fin between its dorsal and tail fins. Any hatchery king salmon caught on the Kasiloff River counts towards an angler's annual five-fish limit for the Cook Inlet region. Additionally, any angler who catches a hatchery king may not fish for the rest of the day for any fish species on the Kasiloff River between the Sterling Highway Bridge and the river mouth. Bomber says that's a new restriction this year. He says it's being implemented because the area is a popular fishing spot and that anglers have historically continued catching and releasing kings after already harvesting a hatchery king. That can unintentionally harm wild kings, according to Bomber. For the duration of the fishing season, anglers may not catch or keep any natural king salmon caught in the Kasiloff River. Any caught by accident cannot be taken out of the water and must be released immediately. Bomber says anyone who plans to sport fish this summer should make sure they're up to date on the department's latest announcements and emergency orders. All updates are shared on the department's website at adfg.gov, and that's also the place to find daily fish counts, preseason forecasts, and permit applications.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.